Welcome to the Bentley Priory Museum podcast. Bentley Priory is perhaps best known as the home of the Royal Air Force's Fighter Command during the Battle of Britain. However, its history long predates that. A key figure in that history is the architect Sir John Soane, who, in 1788, was commissioned by Bentley Priory's then owner to extend and refurbish the house in a more lavish and sumptuous manner. January 2022 saw the 185th anniversary of Sir John's death. And to learn more about him, I recently had the pleasure and privilege of talking with Natasha Brown. Natasha is herself an architect and plays an important role as a trustee of Bentley Priory Museum, as well as having a passionate interest in Sir John Soane, his life and his work. Hi, Natasha.
Hi, Tim.
So for people like me who know very little about Sir John Soane, Natasha, if you could perhaps start at the very beginning and tell us something about who Sir John Soane was, his family background, and perhaps his training as an architect.
So, yeah, absolutely, Tim. Soane came from what was, you know, he was the son of a bricklayer, one of four kids, the youngest. He was born in 1753. Seems a very long time ago now, but his father, he wasn't just a bricklayer. He was, you know, a pretty good bricklayer and had pretty good mates of architects. And so he used his professional links to help his son. And part of that was his son had some studies and went to school in Reading or near Reading. And then he moved to work for George Dance the Younger, who was a connection with his father. And that then brought him at the age of 15 into the line of architectural work. Part of the reason was because, and I don't know whether you've seen any of his drawings or anything as he's got older, but he had a talent. And so that raw talent plus his dad's knowledge and growing up with all of that just combined. And there we go. He was on to a winner.
A lucky young man.
Absolutely. And as part of that, he studied from 1771 at the RA, his drawing talent and his natural ability for architecture and his study of books and architectural books. It became kind of an obsession for him throughout the years, so, which is why we have the Soane, you know, library as extensive as it is now with the Sir John Soane Museum. He won the gold medal for architecture in 1776. Now, that was for his Triumphal Bridge, which is an amazing project. And he was then awarded a travelling scholarship, which if you were an architect of the day and you wanted to learn about all of the greats and all of the wonderful things about architecture from classicism, from Greek, Roman, you had to go travelling. But in order to do that, you had to have a little bit of money. And if you had grown up as the son of a bricklayer, and you were the youngest one of four, the likelihood of you being able to afford that on your own was probably rather slim. And he actually won the travelling scholarship bursary from the RA to be able to go off and do that for 2 or 3 years. So he did. And he met some fabulous people and he saw some fabulous buildings and started understanding concepts of classicism. Basically, I think where everybody went was Hadrian's Villa in Italy. It was basically you learned how to construct brick arches, because the ruins there were also, you know, fabulous way of looking at construction detailing and seeing how it all got pieced together in three dimensions. I think he was actually called back early with the promise of a project in Ireland, which came to nothing. And I think he was rather bitter about that for most of his career. So he didn't get his final year there, but he did continue working. And one of the other people that he then went to work for, I think in 1772, so before he went on his grand tour, he worked in the office of Henry Holland. And Henry Holland worked with Capability Brown, who, I'm not sure whether you know, is notorious for wonderful British landscapes in country estates. And just wonderful, wonderful. I mean, who wouldn't want to go and work for those two, George Dance and then Henry Holland, with Capability Brown? I think we'd all give our you know, right hand to be able to go and do that. Nowadays, you had to pay as well. You know, it wasn't that you got paid for doing so. I think that was the case. I mean, it wasn't paid work per se. But they took him under his wing and under their wings, and just kept going.
An 18th century internship.
Exactly. If only we could do that today. It doesn't work the same way. One of the buildings that Henry Holland did, we actually, as architects, did work on as well, which is Althorp, where he refaced the facade to make it look like it was all brick, and it's not. It's all mathematical tiles. So they all use trickery as well, which is wonderful. Talking about that, and the people that he came across was George Wyatt, who was a surveyor for the city. And his niece was rather delightful. She kept house for George and looked after him and everything. And Soame fell in love. He married her in 1784. So they only met in 1784, I think, in the early part, and then married in the August, which then, you know, went on. And it was through her uncle that they managed to be able to afford all of the properties they then had, because when he died, he donated everything. He gave everything to his niece, and that allowed Soane to actually have money to do his own architectural practice as well.
A fortunate young man again.
Absolutely. I think it seems to be who you know, where you are, and when these things actually happen. Pretty much the story of today as well, I'm sure. So that's how he came about. And at the period that we're talking about, you know, King George II all the way through to William IV is the period of Soane, known as the Georgian period and the Regency period. So yeah, that's quite an influential part of British architectural history.
Indeed. You used one or two names there. Again, just to help us place Sir John, who were his contemporaries, and did any of them help him become established?
His contemporaries were, I think from there, we have to go back to the club. The Architects Club was set up, I think, with George Dance. Henry Holland was part of that. And then other contemporaries that joined, they met once a month and had dinner together, all of these contemporaries. So it was a bit like one of the gentlemen's clubs, but for architects only. Robert Adam, James Wyatt, John Nash, Robert Smirk, Sir William Chambers. Now, these are all names that are synonymous with British architectural history that still survives. Philip York.
That's what I call networking.
Exactly. And what better way to do it than over a drink and some food, you know? But he was involved in that. And then he actually also became, in the very early 19th century, he became a professor of architecture at the RA as well. And so, you know, he kept up all of those ties with the younger architects coming through. Yeah, that seemed to hit home. All of them were involved in neoclassicism, neo-Gothicism in some way, based on all of their study and history and their grand tours, etc., of all of the beautiful buildings that they'd seen, and the understanding of space and awareness of detail and human relation with that space. One of the other things that I said earlier was that he really loved reading and books and architectural books. And through that, he learned a lot about French architecture and the axial relationships between buildings, landscapes, geometry, and their planning and their master planning of these wonderful estates and things. And that's where you can start seeing Soane's own way of working coming through as well, the overlay of all of these different contexts and ideas. And you see that mostly in his projects and in his lectures and in the wonderful collection that's at the Soane Museum, you know, of these wonderful bits and bobs of architectural salvage that he then uses and plays with light and layering in his own museum to be able to get that coming through. So yes, he was fascinating. He had his own marred family. You know, his sons were not nice boys, to put it mildly. I think his son George was apparently, other than just being a bit of a cad and a debtor and in prison for being in debt and hitting his wife and, you know, a real Ooh. bad egg. It is said that his slanderous account of his father's work was actually the death of his mother in 1815. After reading the account, she'd, you know, it was the sort of the nail in the coffin for her.
That's tragic.
Absolutely. I mean, fascinating history. But it's also why we have the same museum, because he didn't leave it to his sons. So it was left to the public. And, you know, there's this, it's family history, isn't it? And that pulls through. But because we've got the same museum, we get the wonderful opportunity to go and read and understand and see his extensive library. And the Soane Museum archives aren't just Soane's work. There's a lot of Smirke and Adam drawings, hand drawings, etc., that you can see there in the archives. And it is a wonderful, wonderful place to go. I could spend hours and hours there. It's fascinating. And through that, you can see some of the Gandhi sketches and watercolours of Soane's impressions of his buildings, you know. And that comes back to things like the Bank of England, which is demolished in the 1920s, which, you know, heaven forbid that was even to be even considered these days, is, you know, partly why the whole movement of conservation came through as well.
Interesting. So in a way, he left an even...
Well, yes. I mean, it was prior to conservation. It was the Euston Arch that really kicked off building conservation and that story. But you have to think that the Euston Arch had a build-up. And one of those was obviously, you know, the Bank of England in the 1920s was one of those. If it would, who knows whether it would have survived the Blitz and things. But, you know, that's another story. So the Bank of England is... very long history for him there. He was there between 1788 and 1833. You know, even me as a conservation architect, I get to work on buildings for a long period, but I don't think I've quite reached that number of years, thankfully, yet. But it would be nice to still be involved in some of the projects that I've started my career on, like Bentley Priory, you know, things like that, that have that history, and you can't put them down. They stay with you, which is fascinating.
Talking of Bentley Priory then, Natasha, how did Sir John become involved with the work at Bentley Priory, and whereabouts in his career did it fit?
Well, in his career, it was quite early on, really, from his own practice. And he was, so when he came back from his grand tour, we're talking 1778-79, it was only within 10 years then that he started working. 1776 was when the original buildings were pulled down by Dubilly, which was the priory, and then post that there are some drawings of what we now know as the Abercorn Room as being part of the main building. And that was part of his 1788 works. So it wasn't long after the start of his career that he was fully involved within it. And part of the way that commissions came about were through people he met on the Grand Tour. And then those connections. So Philip York was somebody he met whilst he was travelling on the Grand Tour. Through that, he went on to work on Wimpole Hall. And from there, that then gave him other connections as well. So you've got the Dubilly, and then you've got Abercorn coming through And Soane did three different phases at Bentley Priory. So it's a bit like adding an extension, new person takes over, add another extension, and then thinking, oh, actually, it's not quite what I want. I need something else coming through. That's how Bentley came about. It was this, you know, three-phased onto an original building.
Right.
So yeah.
So his engagement there wasn't kind of one ongoing relationship that he focused on over a period. It was something that he returned to at different points.
Dipped in and out of. Yes. But I mean, so the dates are 1788 to 1798, and which was the third phase, the final phase. But you have to think, so whilst not continually there, he was involved and around and you know, aware of what was being done and what was being built. And the original drawings for it are at the Soane Museum. So you get to see the plans and the potential for how he was thinking of the whole concept and the master plan. And then you see him changing his views and plans, probably due to money, which we all have that issue of, well, that's wonderful, but I can't quite afford it. Or I'd love to, but I can't do it all in one go. And so, yeah, the house developed over those periods. And the first phase gave us probably what we now know as the rotunda, the main staircase, and the Dowding Room. And those were fascinating, fascinating additions. And what Soane was notorious for was playing with classicism. So he was very inventive, and this invention you can see in his country estates, which then get pulled through to his more commercial and other well-known buildings. So like the Royal Hospital or Dulwich Picture Gallery, which was, 1811 to 1817. So quite late on in his career. What we see in Bentley is the start of that top lit idea with the rotunda, which isn't what we now know as the rotunda, but the concept was still the same. The idea of getting light in from the top to provide this beautiful light for paintings and things hanging on the walls.
That was the intention with that, was it? To actually light things, if you like, that a family liked to display.
To light, and it's a round room, and it didn't have all of those exits off it to begin with, and it had a fireplace in one place and then that moved. So yes, it was. And then when the one room that doesn't survive of Soane was part of the second phase, which included the music room, which no longer exists, which was out from what we now know as the Soane corridor. And the anteroom and the eating room, which are the ladies, the filter room and the ops room. That then starts coming round, and you start seeing how that footprint of the current Bentley gets transformed and increased. Some wonderful details, and the developers that worked on the first phase of works with us were very good at being able to understand the importance of having the correct cornice details, etc., in all of these buildings and all of these rooms, because we found the original details in the Soane Museum. So we could take from a one-to-one drawing and then transpose that with the help of the developers and working with their craftsmen to be able to produce details and things of it. And you can see that probably one of my favorite cornice details, this is the bit up at the top of the room between the wall and the ceiling, is the one in the Dowding Room, which is a very fine egg and dart detail, exquisite. And that joined that through with the library and the breakfast room, and then obviously we've had all of the rest of the changes with it, but the final phase from Soane in the Bentley saga was the entrance hall and the porte cochere. There is a wonderful drawing by Gandhi of the external and the internal ideas and impression and views of and aspirations of what this is going to be. And it the colour and the warmth that comes through from this, you know, Soane was great at using light. He was great at using bits of colour. What you also find is that we had the archives from Ireland as well of the Abercorn family. And in that archive, which we managed to get, was an original schedule of work for Crace. Crace was the interior painter, decorator that worked very closely with Sir John Soane. There was a whole list of what colour paint was on the walls, on the doors. And it's from that that we understand that there was a cloud ceiling in the anteroom, which is now our operations room. And it's why we've reinstated a sky ceiling in that room, albeit slightly different to the one that Soane would have had, which would have been voluptuous clouds and, that beautiful roundedness, whereas we have a Battle of Britain sky on a modern ceiling. So we felt that we were able to do that and use his idea that there was a sky ceiling, but not to recreate a Soane sky on something that no longer exists.
That's really interesting.
It's fascinating. And I love the, I pored over those drawings.
as a layman, I've always kind of perceived architects as people who, you know, in the bluntest terms, have kind of line drawings of a building which they conceive. I hadn't realised that people or architects went into determining, if you like, a colour palette for a room.
More historically than probably modern day. Modern day, you tend to find that on the larger schemes, you're working with an interior designer, although I was very lucky to choose the colours and everything for Bentley. That was my biggest one, was when we did the rotunda in there. We're going for the Victorian green. We are going for the Victorian green. But they got very much into it. And Soane's details, you can see that with his stained glass detailing, with the use and the innovation of line and height, which is always drawing the people through, and there's that wonderful texturization of paint color and warmth that comes through from his drawings. You know, the Soane yellow is actually quite a rich mustardy yellow, which is gorgeous, and deep and rich and pulls you in. So yeah, no, he was brilliant at that. And you have to look at Adam's, you know, ceilings with all of the beautiful detail and fine lines and different colours. Stunning. Yeah.
That's really draws me into the man himself. I mean, clearly you're deeply interested and very enthusiastic about Sir John Soane. What is it about him or his work that drives the depth of that interest?
The depth of that interest, I think for me, partly it's the history that actually, you know, his details have survived, where they have survived well, but they've survived because he was inventive. They've survived because he used light, which we all today really love using in modern architecture as well. But for me, it's the scale. Whilst some of his buildings are huge, and the idea of space is, you know, wonderfully expansive, but there is a human touch and a human scale that seems to come down to the individual detailing of it. And that, to me, means that you can feel you can touch it. You have a direct association. We, the people, have a direct association with it, which I find not all architects manage to do. Some architects are too egotistical to be able to do that. And whilst he was seen as being, you know, very, very different in some ways and too inventive in others at his time, in the 20th century, we really started learning about and to appreciate what he did and how we use his techniques and things today. You just have to look at picture galleries, you know, art galleries, and that idea of illumination from above. Yeah. Has you know, maintained and continues. There might be tweaks, mix to it. But that basic concept has come through, and it's fascinating. And bringing that back round to Bentley and how that's going to be seen in the new exhibitions that are coming through and the new stories that are coming through from the Bentley Museum team. I'm really, really excited to see the new model that's being created of the music room. It's the one room that no longer survives, but it's the one room that you see in the drawings of Soane as being where life was held. You know, it was the music room, there was an organ at the end, there was dancing and people moving. And the detail of the architecture, we started to see during the works when we were opening up. And so there's that little window that you can see of the idea of the colour, that beautiful rosy, pinky colour, and the gold leaf detailing. And on that cornice, there were antler heads and antelopes type style heads. And just, I can't wait to see that. I'm really excited.
And hopefully our listeners are too, because I certainly am excited to see that. Just coming right down to it and kind of making the connection between your enthusiasm, Sir John's work, and Bentley Priory. If I were to visit Bentley Priory tomorrow, what feature relating to Sir John would you say, Tim, you really want to look at and experience that? What would it be?
The part of the museum that's probably not really noticed in terms of its architecture so much, and that's that corridor. If you really want to understand, obviously you've got the porte cochere and you've got the entrance hall, which is the wide space, and we've used different Soane techniques in techniques he used for particular colouring, painting of walls to give stone effect. That's you know, techniques that we've rediscovered. But if you go to that corridor where the music room went off and you go through into what is now the filter room, that corridor with the top lights, with the niches, the cupolas, is just exquisite. And it's a small area, but do stand in the middle of those and just look up and you'll see what he did on much grander scales, but on a very human small scale. And I'd say, that's one of my favourite areas of the museum.
That's brilliant. And I will make a point of seeking that out the next time I visit and absorbing it as fully as I can. Natasha, looking forward, and I suspect I might know the answer to this, given something you said earlier on, are there any developments at the museum relating to Soane's work that you would encourage future visitors to the museum to seek out?
I think what's great about the museum and the team that are running the museum are the other stories they're now pulling through and the threads that they're pulling through. So if you've been before, go again and you'll find something completely different. You'll find a different layer in there. And whilst you've got the Battle of Britain, you've got the Adelaide as well, you've got the different periods of architectural history, just look up. And that's being told in new boards and new stories. And like I said, the new model, which I really can't wait to see.
Natasha, you are an incredible advocate for Sir John Soane. You know, you are his modern day representative, I think, on Earth.
Thank you very much. I have to pay credit to other people who've done a lot of research and a lot of books I've read on it. So, yeah, there are others. And like I said, the Soane Museum for me is a haven as well.
Oh, brilliant. Listen, Natasha, this has been an incredibly interesting discussion today. Thank you for giving us your time and the benefit of your knowledge and expertise. And I have to say, the benefit of your enthusiasm too. Thank you very much indeed.
Thanks, Tim. It's been a pleasure.